up in the red room.
Before the stars can be paid, there gotta be a dope ass story on the page. Let the beast about the cage, that light about the dark. Can you build the inferno from an itty bitty spark? Coffee shop hustlers rise with the cream. A million other writers, same Hollywood dream. Your pen and paper, all like bullets in the gun. Write what you feel, say what you want in the red room. We say what we say, we do what we feel. We gotta keep it real
in the red room.
All about the crap of screenwriting. I fill my bottle up with lightning up in the red room.
So look, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get in. Yeah, what's up, y'all? What? It's your boy, Hilliard Guest, and you guys are listening to the Screenwriters Rant Room, where we keep it real, we keep it opinionated, we keep it what, everybody? 2016. Yeah. On this show, we discuss entertainment, TV, film, music, culture, but our focus is always screenwriting, stories, craft, and shit like that. So check it out, y'all. Today, Lisa Bolakaja got a little left in traffic. She said her cat got stuck in her car or some shit.
That's like on the Dick Van Dyke show. She got trapped in a 1960s sitcom problem.
Exactly. Her cat got stuck in the engine?
Her sister's cat, I think, got stuck in the engine. So they were trying to peel the cat out of there before
I've had that happen to a cat before, though.
Really?
To my
really?
Cat.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Cats.
That's funny. So I'm not introducing Lisa. She might pop in on the episode later on. But we got with me today. To the right, my man, big bro, Jeff Thorne
what?
In the house, writer, producer, comic book dude,
you know, yeah, book
geek,
dude.
Geek soul brother number six.
Right, I'm number six, I'm not number one. There's a lot of guys I got to take out first.
Exactly. And then we got my little bro over there. The Chris Derek, you guys, from the Derek Brothers writing and directing team.
What's up, people?
What?
I said, what's up?
What's up, people? Hot? You can move that up if you want.
Okay, I'm
he's sitting there leaning with it, rocking with it.
Got look that at gangsta lean thing going.
Exactly.
Lean a little bit.
So today we're going to talk about a whole bunch of shit. It's going to be a chop it up episode. So it's going to be some game on writing. It's going to be some game on the universe and the world and all that other politics going on, all that shit. So a couple things. Before we started, y'all was talking about a couple things. Number one, you guys were talking about like industry like industry respect or something to that nature, like being likable in the industry.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And then you guys transitioned and started going in about Haiti and Wells Fargo and shit.
She's going to go to Haiti because she works in disaster relief.
Oh, really?
So we just started talking about like, what's the situation in Haiti? Why is Haiti messed up all the time?
Yeah, yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. And women in the history of Haiti. The history of Haiti and the Dominican Republic.
And then we got into talking about, you know, just like how black people are perceived.
Mm-hmm.
And then we start talking about, like, you know, police brutality and not getting
there's no police brutality.
What are you talking about?
with, like, redlining. And it reminded me about Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo has been in the news of late because mm-hmm. they were doing all this fraud with people's bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
But see, people forget, and I didn't forget this, but during the financial crisis, mm-hmm. they got exposed for that. This is something that the same guy, Stumpf,
yeah.
who's running it now, he had a couple divisions in some of these predominantly black neighborhoods in Minnesota and in Baltimore and places like that, mm-hmm. where they said to their bankers, this is kind of, okay, here's the redlining in reverse. They did the redlining of, so these are the black neighborhoods. It's not... let's not give them loans. Let's target them for subprime loans, even if they have scores, FICO scores, that would give them the prime lending rate.
Right.
Okay. And then they take their cribs because, you know, you're sitting there with some adjustable rate mortgage, all of a sudden it jumps up to, you know, to whatever, mm-hmm. you know, 15, 20% from 4. And so, you know, the payment is now triple.
Yeah.
And it's like, so they were doing that.
Yeah.
And they got sued for that.
Interesting.
Right.
And it was also, but Wells Fargo has a history fucking up,
mm-hmm. right?
Because, and that's what I say about conspiracy, because there was even a situation out here
mm-hmm.
where some Wells Fargo bankers in like Marina Del Rey or maybe even a little south or down in the South Bay or something like that
mm-hmm.
were seizing homes that were beachfront property,
right?
Mm, yeah,
and that's really rare property.
But what happened was this one woman, she seized the property.
Mm.
Somewhere up in Malibu,
mm-hmm.
didn't tell nobody, and was partying.
Really?
At you know, people would come by.
Snoop Dogg and
like,
them were there.
Like, constantly, all the time. And she got caught because the neighbors were complaining because people were coming up via boat to this house.
Right.
So it was really remote.
Yeah. And partying.
Really?
You know, and they were like, who owns this house
nobody.
Now?
Nobody owns it.
The people who used to live here didn't party like this. An investigation found out that there was this Wells Fargo banker.
Wow.
This woman was just like, I got this house now. I push someone out, and before I put it on the market
we gonna get it in for
you know,
a minute.
Yeah.
Okay, now here's what I say to that. Conspiracies, to me, I don't really believe in conspiracies. A conspiracy needs to be, for it to work, it needs to be small. You can't keep a secret bigger than, like, maybe the three of us might be able to keep a secret, right?
Maybe.
Unless one of us was like, well, wait a minute, if I just did this, then I get more, you know? And then all of a sudden, it's not a secret anymore, right? Yeah. But you don't need a conspiracy if everybody already agrees.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And the thing that was fascinating to me, and I always say this on my Twitter feed, I'm like, why are you all pretending that this stuff is just not going on?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the thing is. I'm like, this thing that just happened with Wells Fargo and the thing that happened with Wells Fargo before, frankly, it's what a cop will tell you about criminals. The criminals they catch are the dumb ones.
Right.
True.
Right?
True.
There's a whole lot of criminality just going on.
That never get caught.
And those people are smart. They're not getting caught. Mm-hmm. The cops don't have the resources. They don't have the time. And frankly, sometimes they're just not smart enough to catch them.
Or sometimes they're smart enough to maneuver within the system.
Right.
Right.
Right. So if you're catching someone, it's because someone screwed up.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
A friend of mine who's a, not a friend of mine, but there's an FBI like consultant, a screenwriter consultant. You can like find these people on the WGA thing.
Sure.
He was saying the same thing. He was saying he's like, we don't know who was smart. The smart criminals.
Right.
We actually don't even know there's a crime.
Right.
With smart criminals.
Right. Exactly.
We don't even know what's been committed.
I did this show Leverage.
So it's like, what did you do?
I did this show Leverage a few years ago, and it was basically every week we had to come up with two crimes. Two plausible thefts. One that we would
Is that John Rogers' show?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We would start out with every episode, and it was amazing we got away with this for as long as we did, because the first part of the episode was, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this amazing thing.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the episode, we'd burn it, and here's what we really have to do.
Because
that fell apart.
It's almost like a red herring or some shit.
Yeah, but it was every week. And every week, people were like, oh, damn, that didn't work. Like, you were like, are you still following through this? This is an amazing
structure,
it was a great formula. Right. Yeah, and it was a straight-up structure, right? But the thing that we did, and it goes back to what you're saying about the FBI guy, we had all of these people on speed dial for research. We had ex-criminals. We had street mountebanks. We had people who worked in security. We had law enforcement, whatever. And what we would get back in feedback from our audience was, y'all are just making up stuff. You lefty people calling out these bigwig, you know, industrial people and all this stuff. It's like, are you crazy? This is the stuff. We're not even telling you the stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff we're, quote unquote, making up is like the mild vanilla version of the crap that we dug up.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Stuff that's been super distilled down because I have to make it fit in the story structure.
Not
like
even, like soft. Shit that would scare you if you were aware of what people were up to and what they were getting away with. Everything from little tiny heists to giant governmental crap that you're just like, well, of course this couldn't go on unless the Minister of Finance was in on it. This literally could not happen. Yeah. Unless the cops on the border were helping.
Correct.
Could not do this.
Right.
Well, trip this, because you know, we just sold our house like a year ago, right?
Okay.
And our neighbor next to us was a couple who were co-EPs on Criminal Minds. They're not anymore, but they moved on to other
shows. They're not a couple, or they're not on Criminal Minds?
Not a couple. They're not a couple.
Oh, that woman.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, she knows who she is. So, anyway, no, I love her. So, anyway. So much so, because when they first started on the show, you know, they were, you know, younger writers and they worked their ways up.
Mm-hmm.
Then they became, you know, co-EPs on the show. Now, what happened was, when we first moved there, they were already there, right? One of them was there, and then they ended up moving with each other. So here's the point I'm going. The more they stayed on that show, and we know what Criminal Minds is like, fucking psychos and killers and whatever. Well, one of them would go to D.C. every other year and take all these courses on, you know, with the FBI about, like, how to deal with, you know, sociopaths and whatever. So eventually the house became a fort.
Right. Because they were like, what was up in the world?
Lights would come on, dogs in the backyard. I mean, serious security cameras. I was like, wow. Because he started...
He lived in that world.
He knew what was real.
Yep.
And he knew what we were dealing with.
Well, see, look, this is the thing. There's a movie called Manhunter, which is Michael Mann's
film,
the first Red Dragon thing. I still think that movie has the scariest opening of any movie I've ever seen.
What happened in it? Remind
me. The opening in that is the killer, the Tooth Fairy. It's this footage. It's his total point of view shot of him coming in, and he's got the mask over his eyes. So there's like a stocking thing like over the camera. Mm-hmm. He's just walking up in this house.
This is a cinephile right here.
You know, he just rolls up in the crib. Mm-hmm. Actually, starts off, he's up in the crib. You don't even know how he's in the crib yet. He's in the crib. Mm-hmm. It's a flashlight coming in there. So it's kind of like this, the way the light's cutting from the pantyhose, everything like that. It's interesting. Just walking up the stairs slowly. This haunting ass music from like Tangerine Dream or some shit like that.
Going
up in there.
Damn,
come up in there.
It
turns the corner. It opens up. There's the child's bedroom. Mm-hmm. Closes that thing. Turns in. All slow, methodical.
Lots of curiosity.
You know, it's like, oh, and then he goes into the parents' room, and he's just standing there watching them.
Really?
For like
just
a beat or two.
Just looking at him.
And he turns. He just puts the light on them.
Mm-hmm.
And he wakes up the husband, and then it cuts.
I remember this.
And then you get the crime scene.
Yeah. What happened
after?
You
know, and Will Graham's on. I mean, Will Graham up in there, and Will Graham, but he's like brought on the Dennis Farina's character. It's like blood on the ceiling, and it's white. It's just like the motherfucker. And then it's like that movie. You find out before all these other movies, like Silence of the Lambs and Seven, where these people are really on some old wild ass shit.
Mm-hmm.
This motherfucker, Tooth Fairy. He's up here in the background at their crib. No, he's 2 yards over. He's up in a tree 2 yards
watching him.
And he's like, that's how they find him, because he's like, he's whittling some shit off the branch. You're like, this motherfucker's crazy in a way that you
can't picture.
You know, he's not like your boy John Doe from Seven tripping out or he was really on, like, really. I mean, he's doing the real.
But he's one step ahead of you.
Yeah, he's doing it because that author, Thomas Harris, there's some story about him where he wrote some, I think he got famous writing this book called Black Sunday or something like that, about this assassination at a Super Bowl,
right.
It came out in the 70s, John Frankenheimer movie, really
good
movie.
Black Sunday.
I want to say Robert Shaw is in it and shit like that. I don't remember all
He was great.
But anyway, he was a reporter at some paper, and then he like went down to Mexico to work on some story, and like disappeared for a while. Then he came back, and the next thing he wrote was like Red Dragon, Silence of the Lambs, and it's like some story like that, or maybe it was after Silence of the Lambs, whatever.
Okay.
But he was in Mexico and was gone for a while.
And came back and wrote these motherfuckers?
Had some shit to scare the fuck out of us. He's like, you know what?
Check this out.
We are really crazy, and we don't know it.
I mean, there's a lot of people with bad wiring in their heads running around. They look like us. They act like us. Mm-hmm. But it's fake. It's all, you know. I think I get into these weird debates, as you've seen on Twitter.
Okay. Do not be following Jeff on Twitter, bitches.
Well, just be careful. It's a minefield. That's all I'm going to tell you. But, like, I get in arguments sometimes with various people who have their isms, right? And it's not like a not all men situation, or not all straight people, or not all black people, or whatever it is. Yeah. But you have to remember, if all men felt the way, for instance, Donald Trump has revealed that he acts behind the scenes, if even a firm majority of us behaved that way, our society would look totally different than it does right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, completely.
So what you have to assume is there's an incredibly active, vocal minority of us that act like assholes. Right? Just like what the cops will tell you. The criminal class of the United States is roughly, let's say, 10% of the overall population. But it's not spread across. It's the same 10%.
Yeah.
Right? They go into jail, they rotate out. They go into jail, they rotate out. They do whatever dirty thing they do, and then they might pass it on to their offspring, or, you know, hang with their boys or whatever. Yes, it's usually men, whatever. But it's not like cops don't get to say, a bunch of black guys do X, therefore I'm going to look at all black guys, because it's a set of black guys. It's a small subset of black guys. It's a small subset of Asian guys. It's a small subset of these dudes doing this stuff. They're just really active.
True. Well, that's I was going to say the disproportionate impact. Two things on that I want to bring up. One, we were saying earlier about people know.
Yeah.
There's no conspiracy. See, here's the thing that's interesting. There's a movie that you guys have to see if you guys haven't seen this movie. It's called Goodbye, Uncle Tom.
Oh, I've never heard of this.
And I don't know if y'all have seen this movie, but a friend of mine was telling me about checking it out. And
from the 70s or some shit?
From the 70s.
Okay.
And my brother and I checked it out like 2 weeks ago, and it blew my fucking mind.
Really? Okay. Still?
Well, the 70s people. And
oh, yeah.
The 70s.
Now, this
the
is,
black film industry in the 70s.
But this is a white made film. This is the film that I don't think ever got theatrical release in the States. Because this is a crazy movie. It's an Italian film, and it's an Italian documentary. But it's played with one of these fourth wall breaking it type situations where it starts off as helicopter shot going across this like the water, you know, like in the south of America, like the
a bayou or something?
Yeah, bayou kind of thing. It lands in an antebellum plantation, and it's all taking place like it's in an antebellum plantation, and these Italians from the 70s went back to like 1840 to interview people
in their helicopter. Awesome.
And they got the camera, and they're talking to people
like slaves and slaveholders.
Well, they're not slaves. They're interacting with because the slaves don't get to talk, but they're interacting with all the people.
Really?
And they're down there, and they go to this dinner, and they meet Harriet Beecher Stowe, and she's like,
"What the hell?"
How did you? Where did you see that? Where is it?
Oh, okay, so there's a video store called Cinephile.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
so they have it, and the place called Eddie Brandt's has it, right?
Get out.
Now, because we were talking about Nate Parker's movie, right, which I guess opened the other day, and my friend was like, oh, you need to see this instead. It's like, really? And so this movie puts something like 12 years to 12 Years a Slave to shame.
What?
In terms of how bad black people are treated. And what's crazy about it is you don't even see a lot of violence on screen.
And you still feel it.
But it's just like there's a rape that happens off camera. There's a castration where they use the little gelding thing from the horses off camera. Where they're talking about it and they interview these white people and they're saying, well, why do you do this? And blah, blah, blah. And they get this interaction with the white people justifying why they do slavery. And there's a couple people there who are like, who are some whites from like England or the North who are like, y'all fucking up because y'all have 25 slaves in this house doing your work, and you basically need three, you know, because they're all you know, because the way you're treating them and everything like that is they're not even being really properly used as servants.
So that's the criticism. You have too many.
You know,
you don't need all this. You need the streamline.
So he's saying. So he's basically this guy was saying. So he said, you should get rid of slavery because it's inefficient as hell.
It is.
You know, like beyond the inhumanity of it. But the black people are treated so bad. It's like the way they're treated is just disturbing. There's like this food trough where they're like, well, here's all our like cornmeal and pigs, blah blah blah, and they got to eat it like they're animals, and they got to put hold their baby in, so the baby is like being held and is so wild.
But think about it. Of course that stuff happened, right?
Yes, of course that stuff happened.
Because when you take away. If you take away the humanity of your victim, one, and you take away any moral restraint,
right?
Where you're saying, I hate to keep bringing this back to Trump, but I just hate that motherfucker. because he is the naked face of what has been, by the way, a mild version of the naked face of what's been going on in his country. And what started this conversation was off mic. I basically said when Lincoln got assassinated, the ripple effect of Lincoln's assassination is currently being felt a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, actually, a talented and I think decent-minded man on Twitter basically said, no, it's too big of a statement. You can't say it's all on Johnson. And I was like, he removed Reconstruction. He rolled back Reconstruction. He created Jim Crow, right? He took away all kinds of rights of motion. He voided out people who had been elected into office, right? That's not counting the Indian Wars, by the way, okay? We're not even going to count that on this conversation. And so at the... Like that. Yep. Thank you, Hilliard. So now we're in 2016, and people are like, well, you know, you had desegregation, and you had all this other stuff that, you know, you should be happy now, everything's easier. And on a certain level, yes, the comfort level is much nicer for most of us, I would say. But redlining, the prison population, and I mean the for-profit prison population, mm-hmm. the fact that the Black and Latin subcultures have been telling you the entire time that I've been alive, see how cops do us? And everybody's like, oh, you guys are just exaggerating mm-hmm. or you're race baiting, whatever the hell that phrase means. And now all of a sudden everybody's got cell phone cameras and everyone's going, oh my God, it's true. It's like, yes, we've been telling you mm-hmm. that for 45, 50, 60, 100
it's
years.
It's true, but... You we know. Don't know what happened right before happened.
Right, there's always some mitigating thing. But that's what goes back to this conspiracy thing. That ripple effect from all of the strides that have been made. And by the way, Lincoln was no saint. Mm-hmm. But his choices about how to do Reconstruction, about how to punish our insurgent, traitorous, beat-down enemy.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't right. do that.
They didn't do any of that.
Okay, just, I'm going to address some more.
So it's been festering since then.
Yes.
And so when we say there's this conspiracy, no conspiracy needs to happen. When desegregation occurred, the laws changed on the books. But it's not like all of those Klansmen mm-hmm. and all of those Jim Crow supporters just went, oh, I guess we were wrong. Now the new law is here. Let me just
follow the law. Look, and people don't follow the law anyway.
Right.
But the point your friend Twitter guy said is too big of a statement that Johnson, whatever the rollbacks, who after Lincoln got killed. Does he not know about Reagan?
Well, this is my point, that it's a straight line from that.
I mean, but
you can trace it.
But the thing is that one individual president can do a lot of damage because mm-hmm. everything that we suffer from now in terms of we don't have proper, like, wages is because Reagan got rid of the unions, mm-hmm. pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's pretty much why we're broke
and
down.
The whole war on drugs
war on drugs thing, you know, boom. You know, it's like, people who don't, people always try to say the president doesn't have a lot of power, and he doesn't have a lot. There's some power he has to inflict laws. He
Federal
doesn't have a lot of power,
is big.
But there's some power that he does have. Lot of, you know.
That's why this whole states' rights crap keeps popping up. States' rights was created mm-hmm. so we could have the right to keep having commerce in slaves. Okay, that's what the states'
yes,
rights were
yes,
that everyone was
yes,
arguing about.
Yes.
We would like to expand the commerce of human beings.
It was the Southerners
cattle.
Who were asking for that right. on that. Yeah.
We would like to keep that state's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so whenever people start poking that up, that's what it started with, and that's really what it fundamentally is about, which is why it's always like, we need to have little government. Right? And why minority groups tend to be like, no, we're cool with the federal system being in charge, because that's who came in and kicked your asses when you kept trying to do the states' rights crap. Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's harder to keep a conspiracy on the large federal level.
Yeah, it's
but it's very easier to do it on, like, the state level.
Or town
level.
Absolutely.
You see, you know what? It's like the whole thing about the cell phone cameras and black people. You know, like, who's that woman? Lena Dunham was complaining mm-hmm. about that guy at the Met, you know, and everything.
Yeah,
and
who ignored her like she was some
But see, here's
place.
The thing that I say to people all the time. This is kind of crazy to me. It's like, okay, we all champion Harper Lee's book, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the movie, mm-hmm. great film, Brock Peters playing your boy, mm-hmm. everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we read the book probably in school.
Yeah.
What
First
is that,
book I remember reading. Yeah,
but what does that book tell us? White woman tells the town, black man who cannot raise his arm because mm-hmm. it was the muscles ripped off as a kid, he raped me and beat me, and the beat marks are on the side
Wrong
of my
side.
Face
mm-hmm.
where he'd have to use that arm that doesn't lift.
Correct.
And he goes to trial and gets hung.
Right, because mm-hmm. it's not about that.
It's not exactly.
It's not about that.
So it's kind of like, okay, so there it is. So that's but I feel like now that movie and that book are just like, these kind of blinders that a lot of people just say, okay, that's that incident.
Mm-hmm.
So now let me not look at what else is going on
because it's
so sensationalized.
I think what happens too is that it's an interesting trick that's been played because nobody wants to be called a racist, right?
Yeah.
Even real straight up racists get mad when you call them. I'm not a racist.
Yeah.
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
I'm a purist. Whatever.
This isn't about race. Why are you making it about race? Well, you're wearing a Klan uniform. You literally have a hood on. No, it's not about race, man. This is about economics.
I'm keeping my head warm.
I'm just keeping my head warm, right? This goes back to the different periods of time in Britannia. No, it doesn't. They just made that crap up. You're a racist. Come on. But they're fine with the activity of racism, right? Don't call me. What I'm doing isn't that. And I think because it's become pushed all the way off to this side, the picture that a person has of a racist in their head is some guy who's got like a noose in one hand and a little mini burning cross in the other hand.
Yeah.
And he's got like, I'm with Hitler on a t-shirt, you know?
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
No.
Right? It just has refined itself down to the point where, I mean, we're seeing what's happening on these cell phone cameras, right? And what is happening is the cops, and let's give the cops the benefit of the doubt on this. Let's say you're actually terrified.
Mm-hmm.
I don't personally believe this, but I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt. I see one unarmed black dude in the middle of nowhere standing next to a truck. I got 10 boys with me and a helicopter over me, and we all have guns. I'm terrified. Okay?
Yeah.
Let's assume that's true.
Yeah.
The reason it's true is that they think we have fucking animalistic superpowers.
Yes.
Right? That if you shoot me once, it's only going to make me angry.
Correct.
Right? And then I'm going to Hulk out and lift the car and throw it at you?
We all are Luke Cage.
Right? Everybody's Luke Cage. We're bulletproof. Yeah. We're going to turn into the Hulk. I wrote this little thing on my Medium thing about black people do not have superpowers. Right? Black people are just people with more melanin in their skin. That's it. And that is kind of a superpower. Okay? Because this ozone stuff,
we can handle it.
Okay? There's going to be a lot of brown people around after everybody else goes away. Okay? But that's not a superpower that stops us from getting killed by bullets.
No.
Right? Or beat down. Or multiple tasers. Why 9 tasers? One taser puts you down. Trust me.
Yeah.
Okay? Why do I need 9? I was terrified something would happen. Mm-hmm. And that's part of this sort of, as there is rape culture, there is race culture.
Yeah.
Right?
But that goes to, I don't mean to interrupt you.
Well, no, I'm just saying they don't need a conspiracy. There's no need for them to talk to each other about this. They've just sort of, in the soup of our culture.
Well, it's because
I was just thinking about, like, I still, in my head, can never put together. You see on Facebook or on Twitter all the time, they show you a different photo, like, a black dude who got pulled over, and then they show a black dude who was about to blow some shit up.
Yeah, right.
Who shot some people in a mall, and then he's walking out of it with handcuffs.
Yeah,
you know, and the brother got pulled over for a traffic ticket, and he shot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They make sure they tase his ass or get him down. And
people,
just
terrorists have walked away alive.
Yeah.
They're in hospitals. They're in secret protective custody or whatever. Yeah. And some guy who just went, look, my car broke down.
Yeah.
You know, I told my friend, I was like, I can't come in and rescue or if something's happening. Because if we call the cops and I'm the first person they see coming out, hey, there's something.
Exactly. Like, what did you do, bitch?
Right? And that's what black cops, Latin cops, Asian cops, female cops, it's not. People think racism is just about the race of the person doing the racism.
Correct.
But it is this sort of unnecessary, it's not a conspiracy because...
But look, you remember in Boys in the Hood, they even were saying that one black cop, he was the worst one.
He was the worst.
Right. He was black.
Well, there's that KRS-One song, called Black Cop. But it's not that it's a conspiracy. There's two things on it. There's a really fascinating book that I don't know if you read it. It's called Brainwashed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Brainwashed, written by this guy named, his name is Burrell. I forget his first name, but he's famous because he had the first black ad agency.
Okay.
It's called Burrell Communications.
Okay.
And he's retired now and everything like that. But his thrust in the premise of his book is racism and how black people are treated. He takes it from the point of view of how it's been advertised to us over the last 150 years.
That's right.
And it's like, and he goes through all these examples and like shows, you know, these like stuff now that when you see it, like these ads that would be up in the sell soap or like that would just, you know, like the soap ad would have a white girl and a black girl. And the white girl is like bathed in the soap, and it's like, I'm clean, not like him, you know, that.
You saw that Chinese ad, right?
No. And it's just
have you seen the Chinese ad? All right, it's a interracial couple, Asian woman and a black man, and they're going back and forth, and they're happy couple friends. We're on the friend show way, whatever. But she's yelling at him like, you need to get cleaned up, or whatever. It's advertising detergent, I think.
It's a detergent.
And she pushes him into a washing machine. Right, slams the lid down on him, rub, 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 pours in the perfect washing, whatever sudsy thing, and then he pops out and he's a beautiful Asian man.
Wow. Swear to
this was made last
God.
Year.
Wow.
This was last year.
I put it on my
China.
Facebook page a while ago.
In China.
Wow.
And this is the thing, the insidiousness of the spread of Western culture through conquest and trade in those days has set these tropes. So people who don't even directly interact with black people on a regular basis,
they know from our movies,
they know
our TVs,
from what they've been taught, this is how they act, right? And And frankly, a lot of us are helping. There's a lot, like, hip-hop is split off into a situation where there's a whole bunch of hip-hop artists that the Klan will be very happy to have them perform at their rallies.
Yeah. Who's that fool whose ad is for the Samsung where he pours champagne?
Lil Wayne.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, help me.
Okay,
God help
so Samsung has a phone that's waterproof, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, what's the point of a waterproof phone? And he's like, I'll show you. No, and he puts his phone down and he just pours Cristal on it.
Right. No, and he's like, stop the other guy from pouring water on it?
Yeah.
And says, no, bring me the Cristal.
It's just like, you would never see any white musical artist being portrayed that way on a television commercial.
And this goes
back. They might behave that way because we all know they were throwing shit out the windows at the crazy Zeppelin, everything like that. But we don't see that being perpetrated now as an ad to sell a good that to say this is the feature we all want.
And it's not reinforcing that trope, right?
Right.
Rock and rollers will show out from time to time, but they don't use that.
You don't even hardly hear about it anymore,
right?
You know, except for rappers and
the
shit.
The thing also that is, I have talked to women, I shouldn't say I'm constantly talking to women about this because I'm not, but over my life, I've talked to women frequently about this thing. What is it like being a woman surrounded by men, right? And frankly, it's like being black. Mm-hmm. You have to have certain set of survival skills,
right?
That I, as a dude, just don't have to think about. Black, white, whatever. And now you look at my size. I'm 6 foot plus.
Mm-hmm.
I'm big. Even when I'm not fat, I'm still big, right? So there's a certain sense of violence that's just not coming my way. I don't think about it. A guy would have to take a big bite to start something with me,
right?
And I don't. There's nobody walking around with that much to come at me about, right? But a woman, regardless of size or shape, she's walking around. She walks in a room where there's 10 dudes. She can't take the chance that some of those dudes are going to keep following her.
Sure.
She has to be ready for that.
Right.
That's a thought process that's going on. So if you think about that, that soup that they live in, and then you take what we just talked about with Lil Wayne, connect it to this. I'm a professional writer, and I'm a professional writer of science fiction and fantasy and some crime. So I'm already off to the left as a writer, period, regardless of...
Correct.
Whatever, like if you don't know anything else about me, that's I write in a niche market, right? Then you add in the fact that I'm black. More than once in my writing career, someone has met me myself, found out I'm a writer, didn't apparently believe I was telling the truth, went and read some of my stuff, came back and said, and I quote, I can't believe you wrote that.
Yes.
I told you I wrote that.
Yes.
I cannot believe you wrote that. And there's no answer to why they didn't believe it.
Yeah.
Because if they'd met exactly the same me
as a white
guy.
That's the birther card.
Because you're so well spoken.
Right. Well, God forbid that I would, you know, like I can put my letters together in the right row. But what I'm saying is that we have to all carry the weight of this. These sort of, we need not discuss these attitudes. We need not challenge any of these attitudes. And if you ever do challenge them, why do you have your fist in your ear? And I'm like, man, this is like the 19th time this happened to me today. It's not the first time. You're not getting the energy from this one time. You're getting the energy from 90 times in the last 4 weeks.
Correct.
You know, and it gets old. Some days you don't have it to be the okay, I'm gonna let that slide off me. You know, and then you fold in the fact that you are also a female. Maybe you're also gay. Maybe you're also foreign, a new immigrant. And all these things stack up. And when you talk about what is it like living in America, which America?
Yeah.
What America is a tiered, layered place. It's a stew. It's not a melting pot.
Okay, hold on. So we got to talk about Colin not kneeling down. All right. I know we're a few weeks
you
late.
You know where I'm at.
But Trip. Yeah, I'm going to tell you where I'm at.
Okay.
White folks be going in about this motherfucker right here. They have this thing about us, you know, that like, and they always take it back to the military. Like the military, you know, is the one who's protecting us, and you didn't even, you know, how dare you not, you know, salute and do the whole, you know, what the fuck is the song called?
Star Spangled Banner,
whatever the fuck.
You know all the verses?
I know the two verses.
The third verse.
That one verse they conveniently leave out.
That's why I'm not saluting that. Let's just be clear. This was written by a racist motherfucker.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Slaves.
Right.
See. People don't know.
They don't want to know
that song was written when the British were invading the States and they were burning down the White House. And the British told black slaves,
"Help us out.
If you're, you know what, help us out, and you're free."
I'm taking that deal.
We're not going to send you back to your people.
I'm a slave. I'm taking that deal. I'm
exactly.
straight up taking that
deal. I don't care if you're black or white or Asian. If you're a slave and someone rolls up and says to you, help us out, I'm going to take you out of the chains, you're taking that.
Yeah. There's a guy, Stephen Brust. He's one of my favorite sci-fi novelists. He writes this book, among many other things, wrote this book series called Jereg. Okay? And in his world... elves, they think of themselves as the human beings. They're they're like elves too. They got magic and they live a long time and they're really durable. They got super speed, all so they're running stuff, right? And they call them humans Easterners because most humans come from the east side of these mountains, and it's basically like apartheid South Africa with these elves, right? So this main character Vlad, who's a human being, he's like he joins this little house that's kind of like the mafia family, and they're like, we need you. You got good skills, blah 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 blah. And the guy basically says. But I'm a third classer, right? I'm a downtrodden. Why would you want me? Says because you could blah blah blah. Says and what would you get from me? Oh, you kill very efficiently, right? And he's like, well, yeah. So thank you, I do that very efficiently. Says so you're gonna be on our team. Here's what you get. And he's like, wait a minute, I'm gonna get to kill elves, and nobody's coming back at me about it because I'm part of this now. I'm part of your family now officially. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yep. He's like, sign me the fuck up.
Really?
And then he kills the shit out of a bunch of people who've been, not specifically individually been stepping on him, but now he can punch that face he's never been able to punch. So the idea that you're going to offer a slave complete freedom and then hand so him a gun.
So they made him a deputy, basically.
Right?
Okay.
Oh, of course they're taking that deal.
Oh, that reminds me. I need to tell you about the coolest part about this movie, The Goodbye Uncle Tom, right?
Okay.
The end of it gets to the who's the guy in Birth of a Nation?
Oh, D.W. Griffith?
No, the Nate Parker.
Oh, Nate Parker, Nat Turner.
Gets to the Nat Turner slave rebellion, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's taking, but you meet a guy in 1970, a black guy in Florida, and he's reading William Styron's book, Confessions of Nat Turner.
Right.
And then it's flashing back to... the plantation in the 1820s, and he's looking at white people on the beach and how much fun they have, and it's like he's having these flashbacks to the slave time and all that, and then when they actually go and do the killing, you know, the slave revolt, it's like black guys with afros and in like the 70s back in the plantation killing these people in the beach.
It's Soul Brothers,
why kind of mixed back and forth. You totally need to see it. It's so crazy. But that to me was one of the coolest parts about the film because I was like, because it's saying, it's a black guy today, he's hanging out on the beach and he's like, you white people can have fun. And you look at me because your ball gets kicked over to me by your kid, and you're looking at me scared because you think
what's going to happen?
Because I'm still carrying the weight of what happened 150 years ago, and the fact that you're not is why there's a problem. The fact that you're like pushing it away.
Well, look at
the problem.
Look at what Texas is doing. Texas is where most of our textbooks for school kids come from.
Oh.
People don't know that. Oh. They have in their next round that are going out. Mm-hmm. And I think this is official. It's happening. It's not something that can be fought against. They have reworded the story of the South to change the word slave to workers.
Workers.
Yeah.
Workers. One word change. Why would that be significant?
Because who agreed to that?
Who agreed to it? Because no agreement is necessary.
See, let me tell you, okay. Like, one of the first jobs that I had out here was doing book layout for a company called McGraw-Hill.
Oh, perfect, yes.
And there was American history books that we did for Texas. Hmm. And Texas was the biggest market for all textbooks, so whatever they wanted...
That's what it was.
...was what it was. And there's a few states that were like, well, we don't want the Texas version. Up in the Northeast and stuff like that, and maybe out here in California.
What?
But
Lisa Bolacaja, you know, there it is.
But that was the thing. They are up here, just up here, you know. Just,
hello, hello.
Hi.
How you doing? Continue.
You know, the people in Texas are just like deciding how. Like, I think the Civil War is this is over states' rights. They talk about, like, the whole fact that people don't view slavery as, I mean, the Civil War as a battle to defeat slavery is because the textbooks that came out of Texas were like, we ain't having that.
Also, it goes back to what I said about killing Lincoln.
Yeah.
Okay? When you have an insurgent power in your nation, and it's big enough to cause most of the Americans that have ever been killed still were killed in the frickin' Civil War. So this was a big...
You're all up under the microphone.
Oh, we're on now?
Yeah,
hey, fam,
we're
sorry,
on.
Fam. Sorry, fam. I'm walking in getting my candies and stuff.
We're not just talking. We're doing this for real. This is on wax, baby. But, like, it's the same thing when you change the legislation. There was a whole bunch of stuff that had to happen after the defeat of that power. Whether you agreed with everything, and again, Lincoln was no freaking saint, okay? But he understood, I've just saved the Union on paper, but there's a whole bunch of guys who survived this thing mm-hmm. who are not pissed off. They didn't suddenly go, oh, I guess we lost that. Yeah. Let's chill. Okay, you win. You win the argument, brother. Yeah. It's all cool now. Look at all these black senators and whatnot we got. Right. We're happy with that. That wasn't going to happen, and he knew it wasn't going to happen. So we had this reconstructive period where the federal government took pains, sent troops to make sure, look, we're folding you back in like this. Deal with it. Right? But because that all got stopped and turned around, it gave power to a segment of a society that doesn't feel the appropriate grief, doesn't feel the appropriate shame and remorse.
Exactly. Okay?
All right. Think about East Germany and West Germany. Yeah. When that wall came down, you had two generations of East Germans who'd been raised to think of themselves as Soviet.
Right.
Right. So they think of themselves as we beat the Nazis. You were the freaking Nazis. Okay. But when they folded back into West Germany had all this residual guilt. They have laws in the books
still
that you
do.
Can't do in America about what you can say about other cultures, how certain religions are allowed to spread. They are terrified that that shit's going to take hold again in their country because look at fascism in Europe right now.
Well, but see,
right? Yeah. But here, we didn't do that. We started to do it. But we stopped. And so you have this segment of the population that thinks of itself as, well, we lost, but we weren't wrong.
Well, see, okay, look, this is an interesting point you bring up because keeping the South down, keeping that foot on their neck was necessary, but it was removed.
Yes.
Now, a similar situation happened in Europe. World War I.
Chris talking like it just happened right now.
I know, didn't it?
Like, it is now.
Shit just ended.
Right now.
They put the foot on Germany, and before it was fully taken effect, about y'all messed up, all this kind of shit, fucking up the whole continent, it was removed by Hitler.
With a scapegoat.
And he had a scapegoat, and so that festering,
that's
we are dope.
That's right.
Gave us a Third Reich.
That's right.
Now it could be argued that the treatment of blacks post Civil War is those people who the whites in the South had that there was a boot on their neck, like in the Weimar Republic.
Mm-hmm.
Once it was removed, the Klan rose. Is the Klan super analogous to the Nazi in terms of the fear, in terms of what they're trying to do?
Yes. Let me say this to you.
There was no secondary war in the States.
That is correct.
To
because
put
they
them
did not
down.
Front a second war. Mm-hmm. But here's another thing about that. The boot you describe as being on their neck was entirely philosophical. Right?
True.
The troops that were sent down, the federal troops that were sent to the South to occupy the South, which was how do you occupy your own nation? You don't occupy your own nation. But whatever. Those troops were sent to prevent violence. They weren't sent down there to make you do anything. They were sent down to keep you from doing something.
We weren't
right?
looting and pillaging.
Nobody's looting and pillaging you. We were trying to set our country back up after you broke it. Okay? So please don't keep breaking it. We're going to send some guys down to make sure that you understand this is the program now. Okay? But it all got erased.
So, Lisa, to fill you in, we're just going in about a bunch of shit.
It's been looping back and forth to screenwriting.
But Chris was telling us about this movie him and Will just saw the other day.
I was telling you about it. Goodbye, Uncle Tom. When we saw Westworld.
When he told me about it, I've seen the poster.
Yeah.
I've just never seen the movie, and they were telling me about it. Like, after I went home and thought about it, you mentioned, I'm like, where have I seen that? I'm kind of going through proof. It's like, oh, yeah, I've seen that poster before. I've just never seen the movie.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it might be known by its, like, I think Portuguese or Italian name is called Audio T.O. Tom.
Okay. That's what I know it as.
She's like deep.
That's how I know it as.
She's like a crypto film.
Because my friend who told me about it, she kept saying that was a title, and I was like, what do you... And she said to me three times, and I was like, that's not a movie title.
Hmm.
Because I was thinking it was an English title. Yeah. But, then, right. But then I was like, when she said T.O. Tom, I remember reading this book, this great Don Winslow book called Power of the Dog, which everyone has to read.
Never
likes crime. Oh, if you like crime shit, okay, you need to read this book.
All right, I'll read it.
Shit.
I'll read it. You know how I read it.
It's this book about the drug trade. It is fucking wild. Let me just, a side note. If you want to make a villain hard as fuck, you do what this guy did in this book.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Where he seduces this drug dealer's wife, gets her to run away with this guy, this killer guy, with her and her kids, and then tells the drug dealer, I have your wife and child. If you want them back, you know, we need to meet.
That's how we roll. Right.
We're going to meet. They go and they meet at this bridge in South America, and he's talking, and they're there on both sides of the bridge, and they're walking. And he sees the drug dealer, the guy who seduced the drug dealer away, the criminal, the killer. He just takes the kids and throws them over to the side.
What?
And they smash on the rocks below.
What?
He didn't even plan to let there be an exchange. He just was like, I'm fucking with you.
This is how deep I roll.
And I want to see you while I did that.
Yeah. I want you to look never gonna at me back. While I murder your children.
Throw your kids off a bridge.
Well, that's like Sicario. You saw the Sicario?
Yeah.
He sits down at this table for dinner. And I was like, oh, they're all dead.
They're all dead.
Yeah,
holy
all
crap,
dead.
He's going to murder these teenagers.
Yes.
He's straight up going to kill these teenagers.
Right,
yes.
Right. But anyway, that killer, his name was Tio, because like the uncle.
Ah, okay.
And I was like, oh, Tio Chan must be Uncle Tom.
Right.
So then I was able to look it up on IMDb to figure it out.
I like deep film knowledge. I like one of the things that I always get, it always drives me nuts when I talk to, especially minority creators, because there's this, I've really been lately gotten big on this. We need to start dreaming bigger. Mm-hmm. We need to start thinking of ourselves as more powerful. I can do it individually, but I was raised by a very unique group of people. Not everybody was so gifted. My parents are crazy as hell. But knowing film history, knowing how mainstream Hollywood crushed Black Hollywood right before Birth of a Nation, right before the jazz singer, the second wave, crushed Black Hollywood again, intentionally, right? There was an economic threat over here. These black people were going to see these things because of segregation. We created all of our own little shadow.
Oh, the black
stuff,
cowboy movies,
right?
From back
stuff,
then?
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Oscar Michelle.
Right?
Yeah.
All of that stuff. And then mainstream Hollywood just went, nope, smack. That's your good. You're cutting into our profits. And we prefer you to watch Step and Fetch It anyway.
Right.
Right. So, but.
And come dance in some scenes and we'll cut you out when we show it in the South and we'll put it back
that,
in the
North. You get which ironically includes one of the most racist motherfuckers in the history of film, D.W. Griffith.
Yes.
But a group of people went, you know, I'm not really feeling this studio system. I mean, we're not really being fair to the creators. Let's form our own studio, us who are rich and popular, and we'll just make our own stuff. This is something white people take for granted, right? It's not something that is particularly revolutionary. It is a smart business deal. You have enough social cachet and you have enough money. You go, you know what, whoever was running, whichever Warner Brother I'm mad at today, fuck you.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm Michael Jackson.
Uh-huh.
Bite me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I don't see that coalizing.
I'm going to build my own Neverland. Right.
I don't see that coalizing in the various subgroups. And I think it's because so much of our energy has collectively been focused on get that fucking boot off my neck.
Mm-hmm.
Get that boot off my neck for generations so that there's no room to dream of something like that because everyone's always watching their own back.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, look, I agree with you. I think people should dream more as creators. I mean, there's a movie coming out called Sleepless. 2 weeks. Jamie Foxx movie.
Yeah.
Looks cool. It's a remake of this dope as fuck French movie.
Oh, okay.
Dope as fuck French movie.
That's why you should watch foreign films.
About
you can steal from them all the time.
What's that thing? Get Out?
Keanu?
No. This is Thriller that's coming out.
I don't know.
Okay, you tell me.
But Sleepless.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Sleepless Night, the French film. It is one of the best fight scenes I've ever fucking seen.
Hmm.
The Raid, go to hell.
Wow.
The Raid, go to hell.
There's a fight scene where these guys are fighting in this. Now The Raid has a fight scene in a restaurant, you know, the wine bar.
Mm-hmm.
The fight scene these guys have in this restaurant kitchen in Sleepless Night blew me away.
Really? Holy crap.
It's still one of my all-time favorites.
You said The Raid should go fuck itself.
The Raid
itself.
To go fuck itself.
The Raid, pack your bags.
I go, motherfucker, they did a part two.
I was like,
no, I get that.
All
I get
The Raid
that.
Was a fight
no,
scene.
I get that, but that's why, because the context in Sleepless Night
right.
made it so dope. Like, the context in the movie is this. So there's a crooked cop, mm-hmm. played by Jamie Foxx, and the new one is, and the other one, I can't remember the guy's name, French guy. And him and his boy, they pull this robbery off. They rob these heroin dealers in the beginning, first scene, boom, boom, boom. And like, oh, shoot this guy, and one guy gets away, and they go, okay, blah, blah, blah. And then they go to work, and you realize they're cops. And then they get assigned to deal with that case.
That's hysterical.
And they're like, oh, we can just fuck this because we're
awesome. Now we definitely are going to get away with this one.
That's a good reversal. Right.
Lovely
and then,
premise.
You know, they're there and they're like, they're at the crime scene and they're kind of cleaning up stuff they kind of left there and stuff like, you know, on the slide because no one's looking. Mm-hmm. And then the lead guy gets a call and, you know, he goes home first and he got his wife and his kid and everything like that. And he gets a call and he's at the crime scene and it's a drug deal and he's like, I have your son.
Oh, the guy got away.
Yeah, the guy got away.
Yeah.
I have your son, so I want the drugs back, or your son's gone. And he's like, oh, fuck,
yeah,
fuck, fuck.
I stepped in it.
And he's like, come to my nightclub tonight with the drugs. Hmm. And the whole movie after that takes place in that nightclub.
Really?
That night. Huh. During a club. Like
it's an open club.
It's a functioning club.
Oh, my God.
You know? So it's like, you know, he's like trying to like maneuver and shit, and like, and then his cops are after him, like internal affairs after him. It's so dope because it's so contained. And you're like, right. Who the hell gets to make a movie? I mean, it's not some big massive Vegas club like it is in the.
It's like a real club.
It's in the Jamie Foxx movie. Not that that's not, I mean, look, it's Hollywood film, and they got
a budget.
They can do what they want.
Right. Right.
But the French film. And the scene they have when the guy who's masterminding it and him, the lead cop, had this fight in this kitchen, because that's where it's going to turn in the middle of the movie.
One of us is walking out of this room.
Yeah, it's like the second act curtain.
Okay.
You're like, oh, like so the whole movie's like coming to this head. So
nice.
You realize when that fight's happening, what it means. They're like rolling over the tables and they're grabbing like the salad bowls. And it's just so
But you're saying, and the reason that fight's better ultimately is because the characters matter to you.
Exactly.
Right? Yes. That they spent the first part of the movie making you at least empathize with this crooked
cop.
Right? And really empathize with this drug dealer, too, apparently, so that the outcome of the fight actually does matter.
Yes.
It's not just, wow, look at that cool jump, look at that
cool dodge.
Sometimes
you'll start to zone out. Like, a lot of action things, if I'm not into the characters, I just start to, like, zone out.
I think...
Matrix 2.
Wow. See, this is what I'm talking about. She reached back just to smack that Matrix 2.
It was right there
for
in the dome,
no reason.
You know I hold grudges.
Oh, my God. Poor Matrix 2. Leave Matrix 2 alone. It's just sitting
like,
there. Why are you
I cared
at
about
me?
Y'all in the first movie. But this second movie, does this really got to go on for 20? I'm zoning out.
Wow.
I'm zoning out.
Yeah, you know what? It's hard not to blame the Wachowskis for that little phenomenon where they were doing for a while, where they would film the sequel and the second sequel back to back. I mean, a bunch of movies did that. What are that Pirates of the Caribbean
and
crap?
Also the Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings. Yeah. And it's like those.
But that's money.
But you know what?
It's a budgetary thing.
It's right. money. Yeah. But those movies are never any good.
Well, that's true.
I mean, look, the first Pirates of the Caribbean, not that bad of a movie. Yeah. 2 and 3. Wholly unwatchable. Yeah.
Well, only because
you've been there, done that.
It really does come down to the finance part, right? The studio's like, holy crap, giant blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a
more,
little blockbuster.
More.
We want more. But, mm-hmm.
but it's always diminishing returns after
But the players involved become also blockbustery, and they're like, look, I'm servicing my career, dude. I love Pirates of the Caribbean, but I got 5 movies lined up, so let's get this done.
Right.
The same problem that happened with Matrix 2 and 3 is the same thing that happened with Pirates 2 and 3.
Yes.
There was really one movie there. Just one.
Yeah.
You could have got away with two. Two would have been lovely. And you would have had a great movie with character arcs. You would have seen Keira Knightley's character develop cleanly to where she ended up being a pirate queen.
Right.
That would have been, you know, he becomes Davy Jones. All of that could have happened in a 2-hour movie.
Right.
But then you have these crazy sequences where Gore Verbinski is like, well, he's a genius. Let him do what he wants to do. That craziness where they were running around the island on a rotating ball. And I'm like, why am I watching 15 minutes of these people in a Bugs Bunny cartoon?
Exactly.
Like, I don't need 15 minutes of this. It's interesting, right. But I don't need it for 15 freaking minutes. Right. Yeah, right. You know, get over it.
I mean, the worst case is the recent Hobbit movie. Yeah. Why is that three movies?
Awful.
Why is it three?
And it shouldn't have been. And Peter Jackson resisted it being that. That was a studio, right? Dude, it's going to be a trilogy. Right. Just get over it.
We're going to milk it. And,
and by the way, it needs a girl.
You know what? Right? I think that's why Guillermo del Toro backed out, because I think he wanted to do it as one movie. And they were like, oh, y'all do at least two. And he's like, I'm out.
There's enough story here for two freaking movies.
Right.
Right? But they don't think that way. They're not going to start thinking that way. So when you get in a big budget world, just understand.
They want to keep that merchandising and you know, all of that stuff. So.
I mean, whatever. There's always going to be a friction between us on the creative side and the business side. And the business side wins because they got the money.
Right.
They always win.
And I don't know that that's necessarily always wrong. I think that we have different goals in mind. They want to put asses in seats. If they can figure a way to put a black dot on a white screen for 2 hours with no sound and it just went beep, 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 beep for the whole 2 hours, that's what movies would be. Okay? They would straight up, you know, black dot coming soon from Paramount. Right? Black dot. Two dots.
Well, no,
right?
Like,
you think I'm kidding? I am so not kidding.
No, there's that really funny spoof, like iPhone 7 commercial, where that little girl was just filming her mom cutting onions.
Right.
And it becomes this big phenomenon, like film school and art people are going, this is the best, this is the best. And you see it in the theater, and I'm like, really?
Yeah,
but speaking of putting butts in seats, a friend of mine wrote this article 2 weeks ago on Medium about that. The television should be in movie theaters. The really high-end television should be, you know, you should see it in theater.
Like been, what? Like, give me an example.
Westworld.
Well, we can talk about next.
Westworld.
We'll get into that.
Westworld. Okay. Are we going to take a break?
Next
but,
episode.
Okay. Yeah,
next
episode. So, but something like that. Right. And it's like, you know, like you could pay for it to come see the show, like a nominal fee, not this $15 shit.
Right.
Like $3.
You mean like or, the movie serials used to be?
Yeah.
No one remembers because they don't do their film studies?
or if you had a subscription to HBO.
Mm-hmm. HBO Theater.
Then you could go to the theater, you know, see the show and not to pay because you've already paid
for it.
You just gotta you know, like you just got to type in your little.
Yeah, you get the movie track.
You
right.
Type
that
in
would
your
be
code.
Track.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's genius.
See, that's something you could do because I just, you know,
Game of Thrones?
Westworld, but I would say when we saw Westworld, because we saw the CAA theater.
Oh, the big.
I mean, it was dope seeing it on a big screen. And I watched it the other night again because I wanted to just watch it before the episode two. And I watched it on my Kindle. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's not the
not
same.
You're like my wife.
But
why would you watch a movie on a Kindle? You're a filmmaker, for God's sake. You know a Kindle's not.
No, this is a television show, and I already see it in the theater.
A Kindle is not a television. That's like watching
not
it on a MacBook.
I'm just watching it. I just
why would
it?
My wife watch TV shows on these things? And I'm are you doing this?
I don't typically watch anything but certain television shows that I want to burn through on Kindle.
So it's informational.
Yes.
Okay.
Because look, I'd already seen it. So I'm not like being experienced the first time, but I wanted to like.
That's fair.
It was like a detail. We weren't going to talk about it because there's a detail. All right.
We'll say that.
But anyway, I think that would be a way to make theaters more interesting because Game of Thrones.
Can you imagine?
Can you imagine Game of Thrones?
Well, see, theater, but the ArcLight had one theater dedicated to.
Yeah, you know,
get to see two episodes.
They would destroy.
Just show one. Yes. Just show one for $3. Come back. Because, and the thing is
I'd want to.
Because the thing about Game of Thrones is that I watched that show at home, and I'm always disappointed that the way it's colored doesn't really let me enjoy the sets. And the costumes, because I watched that now on my
on your Kindle.
No. I watched it on my.
This may come from watching things on Kindle.
No. This is the thing. No. I watched it on my Xbox, right, and on HBO Go.
Okay.
And it's got all these little behind the scene things, kind of like on old DVDs where you're a little behind the scene shit. Right. And since I missed that because I don't get DVDs that much anymore, I'm watching those.
Mm-hmm.
And when you watch what the fuck the production is, they spend so much fucking money.
Yeah.
And there's so much fucking cool ass shit. And the details and the fucking you know, oh guess what? You know that candle's not burning. turned down, right? All this kind of shit is so, that's like some Kubrick level type of detail work. Right. And then when they shoot it, it's all kind of muted down in this narrow colorway, just like I can't see everything.
Do you find also that because its destiny is to be on a television screen, that it's also its aspect ratio is also not
I'm sure
encompassing all of the grandeur that it could be.
Well, but see, but they're shooting it in 1.85. No, they're shooting it in 16:9. I'm shooting 1.85, and like so many movies that we know and love are shot in 1.85.
That's true.
So we don't necessarily care. The difference is that now.
But on a big movie screen, if you knew it was destined for a theater, you could do a big, expansive shot, and those little dots would still be big enough.
Yes, exactly. Right. You know, because I had seen a what's that movie? Remember that movie that Will Smith did last year with Margot Robbie?
The one about the con.
The con game.
Confidence.
Confidence.
No, that nobody watched?
Focus.
Focus.
Yeah. What they wanted to say was leverage.
Okay. Yeah, basically.
Leverage. Yeah. It's actually a good movie. It's a good, fun movie.
I'm still out.
Like, for that movie. But, well, this,
you know why.
But, yeah. But anyway, they shot the movie in 1.85. Hmm. And I say to myself, this movie needs the widescreen aspect. This needs it because of what it's trying to do.
Right.
And I feel like if you know that difference, particularly that story, because it was trying to tell big, big, elaborate international cons, that's like the vista that you want.
Right.
And it
felt more... House of Games, House you want to shoot
Too small. Yeah. Right. So I feel like it's an interesting notion to put television in a theater, you know?
I think that's really smart. I think that they would dominate with certain projects.
Yes. You can't put everything in a theater. I mean, I'm not going to watch Mike and Molly.
Sorry, Mike and Molly fans out there.
Maybe.
They're going to leave my Mike and Molly alone.
This is a Chop It Up episode.
I'm not disparaging that show. I'm just saying it doesn't
warrant a big screen.
We'll talk about Westworld later.
Definitely. Well, that's what's up. You know how we do it on the Rant Room. Where you at, Jeff Thorne?
I'm at jeffreythorne.com, and by the time you hear this, I will be at your local comic book store having written the comic book Solo.
Yes.
And the character Mosaic that I created for Marvel Comics. Hopefully,
you
people will show up and buy the hell out of Mosaic.
So, is Mosaic, can I make a Mosaic costume to cosplay? Is it going to be expensive for me?
How much body paint?
I need to get that. I was looking at that the other day.
You do need to get it.
Trust me, get it.
Mosaic issue one. If you don't love Mosaic at the end of issue one, do not come back for issue two. I dropped
in fact,
the mic.
I'll be sitting at the Culver City Comic Shop, and I'll be sitting there and slapping
your hand. That's my that's my mantra to everybody. Read the first issue or read the teaser. Don't read anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I think you'll read more.
I believe you will want to come back for issue two when you see what I put this brother through. You're going to be like, what are they going to put this brother through next? Okay. And the art's great. And Kari and Emilio are drawing the hell out of it, coloring the hell out of it. Mm. I'm on Medium. Game of Thorns on Medium. Game of Thorns on Twitter.
Mm. Be careful to follow them.
Yeah.
I think Lisa be going in.
If you don't come correct, I'm going to get you. So that's it.
Where you at, Chris?
I'm at shadowboxercinema.net. You can also see our movie Architects of Crime at architectsofcrime.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can find me on Twitter at unauthorizedcbd.
That's what's up. Lisa Colt Jam coming in here late today. What happened?
Really quick. Normally when I leave to come here, I'm always here like usually 45 minutes to an hour early. I'm hanging the coffee shop. But when I was leaving this morning, I made the mistake a couple of months ago of befriending the stray cat and decided to be nice and let her have a hookup outside of the bed. So she had these kittens, and this morning I was leaving out my sister's house. My sister said, hey, you might want to track your engine, because last week my sister went to go, we were relatives and stuff, and she left, and the kittens had got underneath the engine.
Because it's warm.
So, yeah, but it's like, they're really territorial, so I figured they stay in her shit. So when I got up, my sister comes running out. She goes, hey, wait. And I popped my trunk, not the trunk, but the engine part. Mm-hmm. The kittens were in the engine hanging out, and then one dropped down. So I had to spend like 40 minutes trying to make sure the cat was out of the...
Safely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have cared.
Wow.
I mean, I love animals, but I made the mistake of naming the babies. So I'm missing one. It might still be there. I mean, when I was driving up here, I kept looking behind me on the freeway like, I hope this baby don't fall out the car, because I will pull over and be like, stop.
But I made the corpse at that point.
I know, but I named, if I had to name them, but I named them Shaolin Fantastic, Geechee Dan, and Seven of Nine. Oh, so Twitter fam, I'm looking for Shaolin Fantastic. He's a little gray-ish, little tabby-looking little thing. True. So I'm hoping he's not in the car still. But you know what? I did my best, so that's why I kind of walked
in
here.
If he's alive
in
that car, he's the most freaked out cat.
Oh, he's mine now. No, he ain't gonna be outside. He's gonna be in the house.
He's not gonna want to go outside. He's gonna be like, put me in a Tupperware dish and leave me the hell alone.
Yeah. So apologies for coming in and strolling in, eating candy, and unwrapping the goodies, and having Hilliard slap my hand. But you can find me on Twitter at What Fresh Hell Is This. Oh, and one more thing. In 2 weeks, y'all, on Friday, October 21st, it's coming back. The Grown Folks Twilight Zone.
Oh.
AKA the British Bonsai Black Mirror. I'm mad. There's only 6 episodes, so I'm going to have to stretch it out. But we are going to be live tweeting with Geek Soul Brother and a bunch of people from Black Girl Nerd. So I'll let you guys know. But it's coming, y'all. Black Mirror. Come through, fam. Mm-hmm. Get your snacks and your liquor ready.
That's
your liquor ready? There's one of those I still haven't been able to get through. The one where they track your whole day and then people can look at it and comment on what you did all day long. I haven't made it through the party scene on that. It's too much.
Really? Too much?
That's the one that I'm out.
One with Toby. Oh, my God. I love him.
He's a good actor.
Oh, my God. But I go back and watch an episode just to watch him.
As soon as they were at that party, they're like, hey, take out your chip. Let's all see what your day was like. I was like, I'm out.
Nope. No, you've got to finish that. It's good. You've got to finish it.
I can't watch people
that,
being humiliated
like that. That day is coming. That day is coming.
Not for Jeff.
That's what I have, y'all. And I'm your host, Hilliard Guest. You guys can find me on Twitter at Hilliard Guest. Follow the show, Screenwriters RR, on Twitter. Any questions, screenwritersrantroom@gmail.com. Big shout out to all the countries that are following us. We love you guys. We appreciate it. Please go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, Stitcher, whatever you guys follow, whatever you use. For Android people.
Oh, okay.
Can you believe people are on Android?
I don't know what's wrong with that.
Anyway.
Don't you listen to them.
Yo, fuck yourself.
Don't you listen to them. My phone.
And please go on Facebook. Follow us on the Facebook page. You guys know who we are. So everybody joining 2016. You guys know how we do it on the Rant Room. On the show, we keep it real. We keep it opinionated. We keep it what, everybody?
2016.
Peace, y'all.
Ciao.
Yeah. In the Rant Room, we say what we say. We do what we feel. We gotta keep it real. In the Rant Room, all about the craft of screenwriting. Fill my bottle up with lightning. Up in the Rant Room. Before the stars can be paid, there gotta be a dope-ass story on the page. Let the beast about the cage, that light about the dark. Can you build the inferno from an itty-bitty spark? Coffee shop hustlers rise with the cream. A million other writers, same Hollywood dream. Your pen and paper, all like bullets in the gun. Write what you feel, say what you want. In the Rant Room, we say what we say. We do what we feel. We gotta keep it real. In the Rant Room, all about the craft of screenwriting. Fill my bottle up with lightning. Up in the Rant Room.
So look, if you guys are grown, let's go ahead and get in. Mm-hmm.